Okay, it's 1 o'clock on Thursday, November 14th. I hereby call the regular meeting of the Camry Community Services District Board of Directors to order. Could you please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? We have all five directors here, so we have a quorum. And I wanted to actually, before we go on any further, we have a report from our council from the last closed session. So, Mr. Carmel, would you like to proceed with that?
Thank you, President Gray. At the October 17th, 2024 regular meeting, the board held a closed session for a public employee performance evaluation pursuant to Government Code Section 54957B. The position title is General Manager. No action was taken, but a good discussion was had. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carmel. I have actually a brief president's report to give, and this is on the subject of the strategic planning process. As you know, in the past every year, we've done a meeting where we get comment and input from public and ourselves and senior staff, in developing a new plan for the coming year. This coming session, which is going to be the same point in time, February and early March, we are doing a deeper dive into our goals, because we'll be trying to set this time 3-year or even 5-year goals. We haven't quite settled on that yet. So the process for that is a little slightly richer in content and steps, but it was developed quite well by an ad hoc committee of, I think, Director Thomas and Director Dean, right, in 2023, and we see no reason to go to deviate in any significant way from that. So that, if you want to see how that process is going to go, you can get a good idea from that template. Vice President Scott and I have been working at this point is an informal ad hoc committee on planning the various steps leading up to that point, especially. And I wanted to tell everybody a little bit about what we've done so far and what the staff has done so far. One of the ideas we had, given the significance of this planning session, was to get the staff input in early and basically give everybody a chance to weigh in on the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, essentially, the SWOT analysis. And this week, I wanted to I'll turn this over to Mr. McElhenney briefly, but he had two all-staff sessions in which they went over a lot of details about what they see as the, you know, strengths and weaknesses, et cetera, of the CCSD. Mr. McElhenney is going to be preparing a report on that meeting, on the all-staff, those two all-staff meetings, actually, which will be presented on December 12th at our meeting. And also at that meeting, we're going to go over some of the other steps in terms of timing, scheduling, and so forth, and formal appointment of an ad hoc committee if needed. But I want to maybe, Mr. McElhenney, if you had anything to say in brief about how it went, because it sounds like, from what you said, it was quite successful.
Yes, thank you, President Gray. On November 12th and 13th, after discussions with we'll try that one more time. There's a little bit of feedback.
Oh.
On the 12th and 13th, we conducted a SWOT analysis that consisted of staff and union representatives from each of the departments. Having discussions with Vice President Scott and President Gray, we talked about the possibility of incorporating more staff input on their interpretations of the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats for the district. Those folks are really the boots on the ground that see our aging infrastructure, that sees the needs from the floor level. And we thought that their input is rather important. Mm-hmm. And they're really the ones that see what's not working well in our district and what is. And so after that discussion, we did hold a two-day session where staff came in and we sat at the Vets Hall for about 4 to 5 hours and gave them opportunity to discuss that. So we used some unique technology. We created word clouds where everybody was able to log in on their phones and freely and uninhibited without fear of reprisal to give their opinions on how they thought the district was operating those different areas. And we had some very robust discussions. Yeah. It was well received, and I'm excited to put together a report that I can present to you.
Yeah. Great. Thank you. Maybe answer questions of Mr. McElhaney at this point. Vice President Scott, did you want to add anything?
No.
Okay, good. Thank you. Okay. Director Dean.
I just want to say I think that was a fantastic idea to do that, and you should make our strategic planning session a much, much better and more related to what actually needs to be done. So thank you for doing that.
Absolutely. And I'll follow up to return gratitude from staff, because sometimes maybe they don't feel heard in some of these. Mm-hmm. And so for them to have that opportunity, they were really grateful.
Okay. Thank you to all of you then. I'll move on to the gender review. This is a point at which we either change the position of any items on the agenda or delete things from the agenda. We cannot add anything at the suggestion of the board members. Anyone here want to make any changes in the agenda of that nature? Okay, moving on to board member communications. Directors may briefly report on their activities, make an announcement, or ask a question for clarification. Director Farmer.
Thank you, President Gray. I just want to mention this. It seems timely, even if it's a day late. Yesterday was World Kindness Day. Mm-hmm. And considering the times that we're living in, it's probably as important as ever to try to be kind, understanding, maybe even forgiving. You know, if we have differences with others, we think about more about what we have in common with them than anything else. And we're all, citizens of planet Earth. We all breathe the same air, so to speak. I can't recall the words of President Kennedy, but it's probably a good time, like I said, to be as good as you possibly can as the person that you are, and be appreciative of others, and especially be kind to Mother Earth. That might be the most important thing at this point in time. So I just thought I'd mention that, because especially living here in Cambria, we have the benefits that a lot of other people don't do. So maybe we should be thinking about being extra kind as a result. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Farmer. Anyone else have a announcement, communication? Hearing no more, I will go to the next item, which is, this is public comment. This is for comment in here on items that are within the jurisdiction of the CCSD, but not on today's agenda. I got slips from two people. Tony Church, I'll start with. Mr. Church, welcome.
I wanted to know if there is a plan and a timetable for the removal and relocation of the CCSD's buildings on the rodeo grounds, in view of the fact that they are currently situated in a floodplain. I'm glad that the county graded the road leading to the rodeo grounds, but frankly, that fails to meet what is needed, as this road is used frequently, not only by the public, but the CCSD vehicles. I would like to see increased pressure put on the county to pave this property. With the wildfires that are taking place close to us, I'm concerned about the ongoing servicing of our town's fire hydrants. I would like to know the planned frequency that is currently scheduled, and I'm sure there is a spreadsheet showing the current status of all the hydrants, and I would be most interested if this could be provided on your website. That's it. Many thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Church. Do you wish to comment on any of that, especially with the rodeo grounds plan? Or, yeah.
Thank you, President Gray.
Thank you. Yeah.
So we have been working with FEMA during some of these disaster recoveries for reimbursements for storm-related damages. The district's very aware about the rodeo grounds facilities and being within the floodplain, specifically some of our lift stations. We are working on long-range CIP projects that will move that lift station. Mm-hmm. The moving of the building is difficult because the building itself is not in the best condition. So the relocation of FNR staff and that building is a topic of discussion. As we know, facilities and resources is budget is really strapped, so to speak. And so we are looking at alternatives and grants and things of that nature, but it is on our radar. Our facility staff did a great job of when they did rehab that building in-house using our own labor materials that we got from Home Depot rather than contracting out to rehab that whole facility because we know it's a threat for flooding again. They did a great job of putting shelves 5 to 6 feet off the ground. They epoxy sealed all of the floors and did as much flood-resistant material as they could in that facility. The desks are on wheels, so they are ready to sort of evacuate that facility if we know a flood's coming, and they can do it pretty quickly. Mr. Geary could go into more details about how he tried to flood-proof it as much as possible. So we have limited resources for facilities and resources, and that building is one of them. And right now we're just doing the best that we can. It is on our radar for relocation.
Thank you. Any moment, I got another comment slip from Christine Heinrichs.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Christine Heinrichs in Cambria. I have two subjects. First, the People's Self-Help Housing Project. Has that funding been approved? In July, the People's Self-Help Housing CEO and President Ken Trujillo assured the board that a decision would be made on the reapplication for tax credit allocation in October that would provide a route to funding for the People's Self-Help Housing Project in Cambria. Has that been approved? If not, what is the path forward on that housing project? Next, apparently Mr. McElhaney misunderstands my position regarding the coastal development permit for the EWS-SWF-WRF. At the October 21st Vets Hall meeting, he said that he knows that I am opposed to approving the CDP. That is not true. I have worked to support the district in getting the CDP approved. My frustration is that the district continues to pursue actions that will never lead to CDP approval. Once constructed, the district has not met the requirements for even completing the application for the CDP. This despite the advice of former SLO County Public Works Director Paavo Okren, who was hired as the district's strategic advisor specifically to advise the district as to how to proceed to get CDP approval, which he did in a report to the November 21st, 2019 meeting. The county and the Coastal Commission have been clear as to what the district needs to do to get a coastal development permit. The district continues not to do so. The county's information hold and the Coastal Commission's letter are clear as to what is required. I have no influence on whether the CDP is approved. The fact that the CDP is out of reach has nothing to do with me. Mr. McElhaney's request to the Coastal Commission to compile all of my and Tina Dickinson's emails over the past 10 years wasted the Commission's time producing it. It's also a waste of Mr. McElhaney's time to read them. If he wants to know what is required in the CDP application, he has the county and the commission's documents. Reading my emails is not going to guide the staff to complete the application. That's a choice the staff continues to make. I ask the board to take whatever action it can to direct staff to address the county's and Coastal Commission's requirements. That could require returning to Mr. Ogren's recommendation that operating the plant be limited to existing users. If you want to get the CDP approved, that's what your advisor told you. If not, please abandon this expensive, non-functional project so that the district can use that time and money on projects that will benefit the community. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comment from those in attendance and public comment? Please, come forward.
Christina Galloway, Cambria.
Welcome.
Thank you. Okay, so I wanted to request that the CSD reintroduces the build-out reduction program back into consideration of the board and for public discussion. It's my personal understanding that most residents, businesses, the environment, and local economy will benefit if we begin to prioritize discussions on strategic build-out and conservation. I'm aware that funding for the BRP is a major roadblock, but I don't believe that avoiding the conversation as a whole is an ideal approach. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone online wish to comment?
No.
Anyone else in attendance? Okay. I believe Director Dean wanted to say something on a point of information that keeps coming up.
Okay, so I went back and I watched the hour and 15-minute discussion that Ms. Heinrichs referred to, and I was present at that meeting as well. And Mr. Ogren recommended that we first get a permit for the facility as constructed for existing connections, and I believe that is what we are doing. Then to pursue the required findings to accommodate the Water Code 350 and the County Growth Management Order ordinance, and also the findings to evaluate the effect on the ESHA, and I believe that is our second step that we are doing. And then he said step three was again to make sure that we are following Water Code 350, the County Resource Management, and verify whether or not we can consider growth based on the environmental studies, the effect on ESHA and our water supply. So am I correct that those are the steps we are doing?
That is correct, Director Dean.
Okay, and I have had one more question that I just forgot.
Give me a couple seconds to remember.
Okay, so in addition to step one, we had to change a couple of things because we no longer have the impoundment basin, and so we had to address the brine disposal, and that is one of the changes in the project description. Now, I was on the ad hoc committee along with Director Gray, and part of the meetings with County and Coastal. They told us to submit the CDP application the way it was written, that they would get back to us with what they needed, but they did not want us to piecemeal back the information hold information. They wanted us to submit it to them with everything together in a package. So it's a one-shot thing, and that is what we're doing. Am I correct?
That is correct, Director.
Okay, thank you. And I want one more thing. Yeah. This is not the same board that was here in 2019. This is not the same staff. This is not the same general manager. We are doing what we can to get that CDP, and basically we are following those steps that Paavo Ogren outlined back in 2019. Am I correct?
That is correct. Yeah.
Thank you.
And to follow up, as stated by the board, we have worked with the county in lockstep along with communicating with the Coastal Commission. As misguided as this public comment was, we are doing exactly what the county asked us to do. Now, that information hold does exist, and as been discussed at multiple meetings, we are working with our consultant, SWCA, to start addressing some of that information hold item. That takes time. We're working on it. The county knows about it. We're continuing to have those discussions with the county. We most recently just sent in the biological reports that were referred to and have been referred to for months now. We sent those to the Coastal Commission. Their response was, thank you, but we would like to see everything as one large package once you are able to address some of their other questions about the project. This is the process. This is the process, and we're following process. If we weren't, our project description and application would have been kicked back. It hasn't been. There are clarifying questions, and information holds are a common occurrence with any project minor use permit that's submitted to the county. So despite the public comment,
we are following process.
Thank you, General Manager McLanny. One more chance for any more comment. Any more board questions? Okay, thank you. We'll move on now to item 4A, which is a presentation from RJ Consulting Group, Inc., regarding the proposed solid waste and recycling collection rate increase for Mission Country Disposal. Actually, I'll turn this over, first of all, to General Manager McLanny, and then, of course, the presenters can take over from there. But Mr. McLanny first.
Thank you, President Gray. I'll introduce the item, Agenda Item 4A, receive a presentation from R3 Consulting Group, Incorporated, regarding proposed solid waste and recycling collection rate increase for Mission Country Disposal. Mr. Garth Schultz is here. He's going to do a presentation for us, which will address not only the staff report, but several of the board's questions.
Okay. Thank you, and welcome, Mr. Schwartz. Thank you for coming here.
Schultz, thank you so much,
Schultz,
Board President.
Mr. Schultz, yeah.
Vice President, no worries. Other directors, staff, and members of the public, I'm Garth Schultz. I'm president with R3 Consulting Group. We are a boutique solid waste consulting firm that works exclusively for cities, towns, special districts, counties, and at times the state of California. We work here at the behest of your interest and your ratepayers' interests. We don't work for your garbage company, Mission Country Disposal, or any garbage company. We're here as your public agents and public servants. By additional way of introduction, I'm here because our firm and me, myself, has been engaged by the City of San Luis Obispo on two key actions that are part of the presentation today and then also part of your packet in our report. One is a revision to the 30-year-old methodology for rate adjustment that's been in place here in San Luis Obispo County for quite some time, and that the agencies, both the city and many of the city, other cities and special districts in the county, have had objectives to update for at least a few years. The company has also had interest in updating it. And I should note that representatives with Mission Country Disposal are here today in case questions come up that are pertinent to them. The second activity that we are undertaking, again, with San Luis Obispo being the lead agency, but with benefit to the district and other agencies, is a review of the 2025 cost-based rate adjustment. So in my presentation, I'm going to cover both of those points. They are, to a certain extent, somewhat discrete items, but they are interrelated in as much as they effectuate differences in the rate adjustment that you would be considering for 2025. Is there my presentation? Is that up for them? Okay, great. Awesome. Thank you so much. As that comes up, excellent. You can just move on to the next slide if you don't mind. So just, I realize you as directors may be aware of some of the points that are on this coming slide, but I also state these things to be pertinent for members of the public at home. But the reason you as a district have an agreement with Mission Country Disposal is that you have an obligation to ensure that solid waste, garbage, trash, recycling from homes and businesses within the district are removed from properties and don't accumulate in properties, creating a health hazard. If you didn't do it, the county would have to do it. But the state effectively says there has to be this health and safety service for removal and safe dispensation and disposal and recycling of solid waste materials. So you have this contract with Mission Country Disposal in order to provide that utility. And for Mission Country Disposal, their sole compensation to provide that service is through rates that you as a district authorize and that they then bill, charge, and collect to ratepayers. And so the subject is really around what those rates are and how they're adjusted in order to keep up with changing costs in this solid waste industry over time. I'm going to ad-lib until we have a presentation, so hopefully that works. No, that's okay. And for the purposes of the board, I actually think I've done this 6 times this week already, so I've got most of the content down. What's at stake here for the district is, both this opportunity to consider enacting a new rate adjustment methodology that has been pretty fiercely negotiated by the City of San Luis Obispo and the Mission Country Disposal's parent company, Waste Connections. Excellent. Thank you so much. Yes, I do want to cover this slide. So in terms of why we're here today, the board is not being asked to make a decision on rates or a new rate adjustment structure today. What we are asking and requesting of the board is to set a public hearing in January, at which time you would then have the opportunity to consider authorizing rate adjustments for 2025, and then to direct staff and then the company to issue a 45-day written public notice to ratepayers that would offer them the opportunity to protest a change, but also understand the reasons for the change in rates. So again, no action is anticipated by the board or can be taken by the board with respect to rate adjustments today, simply looking for you to set that public hearing and issue that, provide direction to issue that notice. Next slide, and thank you for having it up. Okay, I've covered the first couple bullets here. With respect to the Prop 218 notice, and you're probably familiar on this with other actions that you take from time to time, you can actually authorize up to 5 years of rate adjustments through one noticing period. So the notice that has been prepared establishes rate adjustments for 2025, but then also describes the ways in which those rates would be adjusted for the forthcoming 4 years. So you can authorize rates for up to 5 years at once. Next slide, please. Oh, I missed a point. Forgive me. Under your current methodology, you're on a 3-year cycle. Every 3 years, you have somebody like me coming forward to the board describing the ways in which the company has prepared a cost-based rate adjustment request. That's one of the things that we are recommending changing through the new methodology to lengthen the time between these requests, and I'll cover that a little bit later on. But the reason we're here now is that your last cost-based rate adjustment occurred in 2022, and we're coming up to 2025, and that's the reason for this trigger at this moment. Next slide, please. I mentioned the methodology being 30 years old. There's a few elements of it that are no longer a good fit for today's industry, even just timeframes that are described in the 120-page existing methodology, which is longer, I think, than your franchise agreement is. It isn't a good fit for today's noticing periods and the time it takes for boards and the public to actually receive proper notice under the law for rate adjustments. But there's also other elements that are really not a good fit for today's industry. And I mentioned already that kind of time frame between cost-based adjustments being one of them. It's not a very common approach in the state at this day and age to have that be a mandatory cost-based adjustment every 3 years. I believe I've covered most of the rest of this. Again, this is something that has been extended as a result of San Luis Obispo's negotiations with Waste Connections and is available for the district and the other agencies to consider. Next slide. Okay, so taking the cost-based rate adjustment first and then transitioning into the new methodology, you may be aware, but the cost-based rate adjustment is looking at the true cost of providing service for Mission Country Disposal. So they provide their audited financial statements. That's a part of the application that they issue to the district and other agencies. And our firm has reviewed their audited financial statements, not just for 2023, but I think even back all the way to 2018, to understand the trends over the course of time for this business unit. Within that, they also then make projections for, based on 2023's actual costs as audited by a third-party CPA firm. What do the costs look like they will be for 2024, anticipating changes in, cost of living for staff and fuel and things like that. And then they make projections to the coming 2025 year in order to establish what's the cost plus a reasonable profit that they will request for 2025. So that is the meat of what a cost-based rate adjustment is. Now I'm going to describe some of what's driving the cost-based rate adjustment for this year. And there are a couple primary drivers to that change. One is the cost of processing the organic waste. That's the green container waste that homes and businesses now under state law SB 1383 must subscribe to. The cost for that processing has roughly doubled over the course of the last couple of years. It's a third-party entity with whom Waste Connections has a contract, and their cost of operations, as originally proposed, haven't been sufficient to be able to provide the service. So this is an external third-party cost to the company that's outside of their control, but is still a true cost of what it takes to comply with this state law that organics can't go to landfill. They need to be composted, or in this case, digested, and prevent greenhouse gas emissions. A second driver of the rate adjustment for this coming year, 2025, is a market and cost reset to the company's intercompany. They also own Cold Canyon Landfill, so the Waste Connections has Mission Country Disposal, your collection operator, and Cold Canyon Landfill, where the garbage material goes to be buried in the ground safely and securely. They have not had a change in that cost funded by the rates in 8 years. So there have been, you know, that's been a flat or static intercompany charge for the last 8 years. So this year, the company requested and we verified an adjustment both to get it up to, you know, the CPI adjustments that would have occurred for the last 8 years, plus changes in other costs, including but not limited to material costs for installing additional cells within the landfill facility, cost of upgrading capital equipment to meet current California Air Resources Board standards and mandates. And so that's a reset that's occurring and that they requested and we evaluated. It's important to understand that most of what Mission Country Disposal does for you as a district and the other agencies here in the county is the collection app operations. The people in trucks coming to homes and businesses every week to pick up those three containers. Those costs are actually changing just modestly. So it's around a 4.2% change over the prior year. And that's for the cost of labor, benefits, fuel, tires, parts, insurance. So those are actually fairly well-maintained and fairly predictable costs at this stage. It's the post-collection costs that are the primary driver of the rate increases that you see and the rate adjustments you see in your packet and that I'll be describing in further slides. Now, pivoting briefly back to the change in rate adjustment methodology. So, you know, everything I've described to date has been about the, you know, rate adjustment as a fit for the current methodology, the 30-year-old methodology. In order to transition to a new methodology, there was a couple things that were negotiated. And it was because the company is carrying risks in the new methodology that weren't present before, and I'll describe those in a moment. But the two primary adjustments were a removal of a prior limitation on a corporate overhead charge. That's not to say that corporate overhead is going to be unlimited and not capped or controlled. It's that with the 30-year-old rate manual, there was a suppression on the amount of ratepayer funding that could cover a corporate overhead charge that the company incurred. And that's because 30 years ago, these were privately held entities, and corporate overhead was effectively officer salaries. So this was a way of controlling and making sure that officer salaries were reasonable and commensurate with what ratepayers were receiving in terms of benefit. Corporate overhead today is what Waste Connections, as the parent company, provides in terms of services down to the local business unit. That's things like tax preparation, internet technology, human resources, and other items listed in the report. I can't remember them all off the top of my head, and if you have questions, they can speak to it a bit more germanely themselves. To the point here, they've been carrying an expense for this on their audited financial statements forever. They just haven't been able to recover rate revenue in order to be able to fund it. So that's one of the requests that they had, and again, in order to move towards a new methodology. The second is an update to their profit allowance. Within the existing agreement, there is a profit allowance methodology that's, one, difficult to describe because it's not like just profit margin. It's called an operating ratio, and it's a funky bit of math that's difficult to describe publicly. So we're moving to a true profit margin kind of calculation and making slight adjustments to that in order to accommodate their change in risk with the new approach and the new methodology. And I'll describe exactly what those changes are when we get to a couple of the next slides. Next slide, please. Okay. So when all's said and done, what does this mean for the district and the district's ratepayers? So on the left-hand side, I've categorized the company's expenses into different buckets, and then the middle column is what the dollar value of those were in the original application, and on the right-hand column is the adjustments to that application yielding a difference in overall rate adjustment factor. So you can see on the very top line, the collection services, again, the people and the trucks picking up the containers from homes and businesses and bringing them back to the landfill facility and the organics facility. It's roughly $2 million here in the district. the profit allowance is calculated on that collection services. So I want to be clear about that. If you've read the report, you can see we're making a recommendation for a step up to a 9% profit allowance in 2025 and a 10% in 2026. That's not on everything. It's just on their collection services line. So when you look at it as a part of everything, and I have a pie chart showing this, it really amounts to more like 5 or 5.5% of the overall ratepayer rate or the ratepayer revenues. So I hope that's clear. Post-collection services, again, those are the services for the disposal of landfilled waste, processing of organic waste at the anaerobic digester, and the marketing, sorting and marketing of recyclable materials. One point just to get out there, and for those of you paying attention to the news back in 2017, there was a significant shift in the value of recyclable commodities on the international global marketplace, whereas there used to be kind of a net economic benefit to recycling. Today, because China and other Southeast Asian nations have decided they don't want to take our garbage, because we were mixing it in with that as an industry, that is basically meant that there's a net cost now to recycling, and that is a permanent change in the overall world economy. So just want to make sure that's known. And then agency fees that are allocated to the agency, that's part of what's being shown. And it's not precise to exactly what you receive, but it's a part of the overall existing current methodology that will change. So total cost projection line is really what it would take to fund the company's, you know, cost of service projections and reasonable profit and fees. And then revenue at current rates is what they are earning in rate revenues today in 2024 before any adjustment that you as a board might make to their rates. So that surplus shortfall is really a surplus, it's a shortfall in rate revenues if you were not to adjust rates. And I know that's a question that the board may have is, this is after rate adjustment, they would not continue to have a shortfall. The idea is that the rate adjustment addresses that shortfall for the coming 2025 year. So you can see after everything's said and done, with the new methodology and the adjustments that we've made, it's actually a reduction to the recommended rate adjustment for 2025, whereas their original application and request was 12.78%. It's gone down a little bit to 12.59%. And if we go to the next slide, Matthew, sir, if you don't mind, thank you. This is actually the walk-up of how we get from point A to point B. So again, the top line, you can see the original rate adjustment application, and then adjustments that we've made to that. One thing I'll call out, and I mentioned there was a few things that were outdated in that 30-year-old rate adjustment methodology. In that methodology, it directs the company to depreciate their rolling stock trucks over a 7-year time frame. Today's modern garbage trucks last 10 years, and so this is a change to change the depreciation lifetime of all of their rolling stock from a 7 to 10-year basis to the benefit of the rates and to the ratepayer. We've already talked about the removed limitation on corporate overhead in order to appropriately fund those benefits provided by the parent company. On the next slide, I'll talk about some service enhancements that the company is, you know, strongly offering and suggesting be implemented on a countywide basis to the benefit of the ratepayers. That's adding less than half a point to the rate adjustment. I've talked about the profit allowance, and then because your rates are actually lower after our adjustments, there's a negative adjustment for franchise fees because it's also based on gross revenues. So you can see where we land at the 12.59%. Next slide. Okay, so what does this mean? You know, at 12.59% adjustment for your district's ratepayers, well, you've got three common sizes that are available to residents: small, medium, and large, corresponding to 32, 64, and 96-gallon garbage container. I do want to remind the board and everyone at home listening that you pay your garbage rate based on garbage size, but you also get recycling service and organic service, cleanup service. So there are other services bundled within that rate, but the proportion is based on the garbage size alone. You're unique as a district in the sense that the vast majority of your residential ratepayers are in that smallest size. And when we look at some of the charts, you'll see why. But 86% of your residential subscribers are in the smallest container size. 12% are in the medium size, and a mere 2%, I think 71-ish subscribers, are in that large 96-gallon size. So hopefully that gives a sense of proportion for what it really means to ratepayers here in the community. 86% in the 32-gallon container size, 12% in the 64-gallon container size, and 2% in the 96. And I say that's unique. I've worked for hundreds of cities in the state over the course of my career. I came from local government in a community that actively pushed folks to divert more and downsize their garbage containers. I thought that community had everybody beat because they're at around 60% in their smallest size. You guys got them beat by, quite a few strides, and that's an important outcome. But you can see on the 2024 monthly rate for the 32-gallon today in 2024 is $41.52 a month. If in January you authorize the rate adjustment, that would go up to $46.75 for a change of just under $5.25 per month for those rate payers. Next slide, please. So service enhancement, I mentioned these before, and I neglected to list one on this slide. And I'll actually start with the one I neglected to list. You presently have a low-income discount for your ratepayers in the 32-gallon container size. It's a 40% discount for those that can show proof or evidence of hardship, right, and needing that economic support. And you're funding that now through the franchise fees that you receive from the company. What the company's offering countywide is actually for them to fund 20% discount to that 32-gallon rate. So what that would mean for you is you could still continue with your 40% discount, but you'd only be paying half of it going forward, with the company paying for the other half of that discount to those rate payers. So that's an added benefit to the district that has been negotiated through this process. And then the two other service enhancements, this first one is really designed to reduce barriers for residents to get rid of unwanted waste materials and thereby combat illegal dumping, which is a known issue in the county that the IWMA is even focused on addressing. So, you know, presently you have twice a year your annual cleanups. During those cleanup weeks, folks can put out a bulky item and pay a discounted service rate in order to get rid of that. Their first one, each of those times now, will be free, included in the rate base, but they won't be paying directly for it at the curb. So that's an added benefit to ratepayers there, twice a year, free item instead of discounted. And then the annual card exchange. With the introduction of food scraps and food soiled paper into the green container, those containers have gotten a little nastier. At least I know mine at home gets a little bit funky. And the company, you know, has had a practice up to date of, when folks call in and say, look, my container's gross, I need an exchange, they'll do it as a courtesy to a ratepayer, but it's not a formalized program that's advertised or available to everyone. It's really case by case. Through this change, the company would be, you know, advertising an offering for every single residential ratepayer can change out one container per year for no cost. And, you know, if it were me, I'd do the green bin first. But over the course of 3 years, you could start with the green bin, do the blue bin, do the black bin, and then keep on that cycle. I want to clarify, those bins go back to the yard and get cleaned out. And for so long as they're still fit for use, they'll be returned out into service. Those bins aren't going to be wasted or you know, purchase new bins to replace them. It is a cleaning program that occurs back at the yard. They don't do it in front of the home or on the street because that's just operationally inefficient. So those are the three service enhancements that also were a negotiated result, an outcome of this process. And again, 0.45% of the rate adjustment would go to fund the two on the screen. The low income discount is funded out of Waste Connections, you know, bottom line, and not through ratepayer funding. Next slide, please. Okay. So this is an overall look at the company's expenses across the county. I should caveat that this isn't tailored directly to the district, and when I come back to you in January, I can give you a pie chart that's a bit more tailored to you. And the first call out here is your agency fee is not 10%, it's 6%, so that's one adjustment. But this is to give you and those listening at home and in the room really a sense of scale. What are you paying for when you're paying your garbage rate? Over half of it is for those collection services I mentioned before, the people in the trucks going door to door and driving all the way back down to South County to dispose of the contents. For you, that number is closer actually to 60% rather than the 56% shown. Under a third of the costs that you fund through the rates is for the post-collection activities. I've mentioned these a couple times, but it's the landfilling of garbage, the third-party charge for the processing of organics and the processing of recyclables. And then that leaves agency fees and then the company's, you know, profit allowance. Company's not guaranteed a profit. The rates are set to allow them a profit if they control their expenses to work within the revenues that the rates allow. So I do want to make sure that's a known quantity here. It's not a guarantee. It's just you're setting rates to allow a reasonable return on their investment. And then, you know, as a part of the entire rate base, that's, you know, 5% coming forward for 2025. And with the additional tweak that's recommended for 2026, it would be around 5.5%. So that's just for a sense of scale. And I think last, but getting close to last here. So to the exciting part for me, because this is what we've really been working on now with the company and the other agencies, and including yours, in terms of comment and stakeholder engagement for a few months, is the change to the rate adjustment methodology. There are objectives that all the parties have held here around that methodology, and it's to increase rate stability. And you've experienced this here, instability in the rates over the course of the last 6 or 8 years or so, with, you know, punctuated spikes in rate adjustments over time. We want, and the new methodology will deliver on, more stability, more predictability, more transparency. Even some of what you're hearing from me today is probably different than you've seen and heard from similar presentations before. And then the added benefit being for the agencies and for the company, an ease of administration and greater cost effectiveness. Doing this every 3 years has been a costly endeavor for the parties and costly for the company, and the new methodology will ease that. So the first piece of this is, you know, extending the time frame between these cost-based adjustments, going from a cost-based adjustment followed by 2 years of CPI to a cost-based adjustment followed by 4 years of CPI before you get to the next cost-based adjustment. So again, lengthening the time between. There's a little bit of risk to the company in that, because they've got to live within the CPI-adjusted rate for a longer period of time, which is one of the reasons we've got that trade-off on the profit allowance. The other thing that we're doing here is introducing a cap and a floor on the CPI adjustment in order to bound within a certain moderate range rate adjustments going forward. And this isn't to say the whole rate would be bound by it, but it's the contractor's compensation and the rate would be bound by a 5% ceiling and a 2% floor, with the knowledge that amounts, you know, if CPI is 7%, there'll be a 2% that would carry forward to future years. But again, it's going to keep those annual rate adjustments within a tighter overall range of experience. A second component is a revenue balancing account. And what that means is if the company earns more than the projected target that we showed on the prior slide, well, then that would carry forward to the benefit of the ratepayers in future years, with the opposite also being true. What that does is it helps ensure, one, company doesn't get to a place of over-profitability on these contracts, but the opposite also being true, that if they're in a place of under-profitability because revenues don't materialize for some reason, that it keeps them from coming forward for that cost-based adjustment. I should disclose, in reviewing the company's financial statements for the Mission Country Disposal Region, there's one of the reasons that they've been interested in a change to the methodology is they really have not, you know, for several years didn't achieve any profit on these engagements. That started to shift back over the course of the last couple of years, but it has not been an overly profitable engagement for them. I mentioned the second to last bullet already. Again, the primary intention here is to extend the time between cost-based reviews, but also make them optional. If come 2030, which would be the next option, if the company is not requesting a cost-based adjustment and wants to stick with the CPI, and you don't want to request a cost-based adjustment and want to stick with the CPI, well, then the CPI would carry forward. I've done this with a bunch of agencies up in Marin County, and we just crossed our first year where they could have requested a cost-based adjustment, and the parties did not. They stuck with the CPI adjustment, which came in at around 4% this year. So again, I think it's providing more flexibility and more opportunity to stabilize rates. There's a final asterisk on that, which is there are a few things coming down the horizon that may change the company's cost structure in ways that are outside of their control. So the methodology, and we're finalizing a draft of it now, and as soon as it's ready for release, we'll distribute it through your general manager and make it a bit available for review, certainly before the anticipated rate hearing in January. But it's the ability for the company to come forward with an extraordinary change in cost and a justification for it. The main one that's on the table is the Air Resources Board Advanced Clean Fleet Zero Emission Mandate. It affects you as a district. I'm sure you're probably planning around that. It also affects the private solid waste fleets. None of that's included in this application at this time because it's premature. The technology is not there for solid waste collection vehicles. The prices aren't known. You can't buy a whole fleet of them at this stage. But come 2030, the company will need to be in the position of having 10% of their overall fleet meeting the zero emission mandate. And then beyond, I think by 2040, unless the regulations change, they would need to reach complete zero emission fleet. That may not be something that's immediately on the table for you here in Cambria, but it is just something as by way of an example of a release valve in the event that there are costs that change, again, outside of the company's direct control. Okay, I think we're in the home stretch. The next slide. Okay, so everyone always wants to know where they stand, and for you, I want to also explain a few of the things that you see in the coming slides. So you can see what this is the monthly 32-gallon rate, not just here in San Luis Obispo County, but we also included rates in Santa Barbara County. And then the one you see there, that's MRWMD, Monterey Regional Waste Management District. So we tried to cast a pretty comprehensive view of the Central Coast. And you can see for this monthly 32-gallon rate, you're kind of in the upper third, or maybe the low end of the upper third of the overall rate. Bear in mind here, most of your residents, 86% of your residents, fit within this chart and not the charts I'm about to show you. The other thing I want to highlight before we show you those charts is every rate structure for solid waste rates in every community is a little bit different. And for yours here, they're legacy rate structures that were set probably decades ago. Yours is one that it strongly incentivizes folks to subscribe to the smallest solid waste container size, and thereby also encouraging them to recycle and compost more. My read of it is with 86% of your residents fitting here, that's been a successful strategy. So I would offer that you probably have pretty avid recyclers and composters in your residential community. So that's a sign of success. Next slide. It's also why your 64-gallon monthly rate looks very high in comparison to everyone else. It's your 64-gallon rate is literally double your 32-gallon rate. It's why a lot of folks don't subscribe to this one. It's also why it appears high. Most of the other communities, with a couple of exceptions, don't have that linearly graduated rate structure that you have, with the 64 being twice the 32 and the 96 being three times the 32. So I just wanted to help explain that because I know yours shows up as an outlier here. Again, my take on it is the reason it's an outlier is that graduated rate structure. And being a successful rate structure and that it's pushed folks towards that smallest size. Next slide. And you can see that pattern repeated here again. And we'll go on to the final slide, final chart. For your commercial rates, and there are, you can see in the Prop 218 draft notice, there's a bunch of configurations. Commercial rates can subscribe to different bins and different frequencies and different number of days per week. This is just one example. Those are actually, I think, more moderate in comparison to many of the other comparative communities, especially those that are a bit further distanced from the receiving facilities in the corporation yards. Again, all agencies have slightly different rate structures. Yours here it seems to be treating kind of your lower waste generating residents and your commercial businesses somewhat fairly in comparison to the marketplace. And then I think we're at the end, which is bringing us back to the beginning, which is just a reminder for the recommended action. And with that, happy to take questions you might have.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Schultz. That was a very thorough presentation and very informative. First thing I'll do is open this to questions from the directors, from the board members, and then we can have any public comment that's desired. First of all, so directors. Dr. Dean? No questions? Okay, yeah, President Scott.
Yeah, and thank you very much, Mr. President, and thank you, Mr. Schultz.
Schultz.
And this maybe isn't within your bailiwick, but, you know, the 40% increase that we had last year.
3 years ago.
3 years ago. Boy, time flies. Can you tell me why that happened?
I can attempt to. I wasn't a part of that process at the time. I know it occurred. The primary reason it happened, and it affected other agencies here in the county as well, so you were not isolated, was because of state law SB 1383 requiring new services to keep organic waste out of landfill. So that law signed into law in 2016 and really starting to take effect more in the 2020 to 2022 created requirements for new programs that had to be enacted by agencies. So my takeaway was that that law shifted costs and created a spike in costs that then, you know, required a change in rate. But it was I didn't read a lot of advanced planning ahead, and I actually kind of credit the existing methodology as not allowing for that advanced planning ahead. It's something that other agencies, as early as 2016, started to make incremental adjustments in order to fund slowly. My read is that you as a district and other agencies here, especially in North County, kind of had to bite that pill all at once. And that's my short version of what I think happened. Again, not having evaluated it at the time or been in the room.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I did have a question regarding how costs are allocated by waste management, by the parent company, to the various contractors, because I noticed that the increases that we were in line for either under either of these methods are quite high, as are those of Cayucas and Los Osos, which are the Mission Country agencies. And why are the costs, or whatever it is, the increased costs so much larger for that group than it is for most of the others?
Excellent question. I was hoping that we'd get that one, because it also points to one of the benefits that we're trying to leverage as an outcome with the new methodology. So the reasons are twofold. One, you're further distanced from the receiving facilities. You know, an hour each way to get to the landfill and the organics processing facility creates for, you know, effectively less collection efficiency, fewer homes, fewer tons collected per day or per hour by those employees, because they have less on-site productive route time. And the route time is a part of what is used to allocate costs from the parent down to the subsidiaries. So that's one part of the answer. The other part of the answer, I believe, is a negative feedback loop that has occurred because of the spikes in rates that Director Scott brought up. With a spike in rates, I think that further pressured folks into the smaller, cheaper waste collection container sizes. But it's important to know that though the rates for that are linearly graduated, you know, you pay the same amount per gallon in a 96 container as you do in a 32-gallon container, that's not true to the costs. For the garbage company, the cost to go to a home and pick up a big container versus a small container is virtually identical. Mm-hmm. The cost to truck that waste back down to South County is virtually identical. Really, the only variable portion of that cost is how much material was in the bin. And that's, you know, when I have a small bin, I stomp on it at home, so there might not even be that much difference in the costs. So what I think, you know, part of the story is that what happened is, I believe that, and the evidence, you know, in their revenue system actually shows this, is that projected revenue was not achieved because folks, changed their subscriptions towards the cheaper rate because they saw the rate going up. I hope I'm explaining that well or understandably.
Okay. Because just to follow up on that, I noticed also in the statements in your report on the profit, year-over-year profit, or year-by-year profit of the divisions, separate divisions, Mission Country seems to be the least profitable up till now. Is it kind of a catch-up thing going on too then?
I think it's a catch-up thing. I mean, well, no, I mean, both catching up to where they should be. There's no back casting, right? They're not clawing back anything that they, you know, feel they should have been owed or that was a loss at the time. So there is a bit of a catch-up. President Gray, the other thing I would actually raise, and I forgot to mention, one of the elements of the new methodology that we're introducing, and it's still yet to be fully finalized, but if you'll see it referenced in my report, is that going forward, we hope and believe that the company is going to be able to present their financial statements on a consolidated regional basis and not on these individual company bases. In speaking with the company, we know that that's part of their intended direction anyway. It's one parent company. They don't need to continue to operate these three distinct business units. So there's a likelihood that between now and the next time the next cost-based adjustment comes forward, they will just have consolidated audited financial statements anyway. And part of what we're advocating for in our role here as kind of broker of a deal that is fair and transparent is actually to have them do that, even if those business units haven't been consolidated. And my perception is that will have a smoothing effect for those of you here in North County that have been on the receiving end of those kind of higher adjustments due to the lower profitability achievement. Thank you for reading my report.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Dr. Farmer.
Thank you, President Gray, and thank you again, Mr. Schultz, for your presentation and answering our questions. So just following up on what President Gray said with regard to the rate adjustment, you know, it being the highest here in Cambria and then followed closely by Los Osos and Cayucos. So I'd just like an explanation. It's Table 7 on page 36, or 12 of 19, where it says change in corporate overhead, and the lowest amount is Cambria, as well as the other two communities that I just mentioned. What does that mean?
So the change in corporate overhead is affecting you less than the other communities. So the removal of the prior limitation has a lesser impact on your ratepayers than it does on ratepayers in South County. That's what that means. So in removing that, there is an upward adjustment in the rate. It costs a little bit more in the rate to fund that, but you'll be funding it proportionately less than other agencies.
Okay, and if you could just explain for my limited capacity to understand how finance is, corporate overhead.
So their corporate overhead is a charge that's passed down from Waste Connections, you know, kind of parent company, down to the local operations, you know, effectively as an intercompany transaction, but it funds services that the corporate parent provides. And again, internet technology, human resources, tax and legal advice. I think there's a couple others that I'm missing, and I know General Manager Jeff Claren might be able to speak to some of the other services that are funded through that charge.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. Vice President Scott.
Yes, I have one more question. Thank you. On page 47 of our board packet, it's in attachment 4 of your indexed rate adjustment methodology example calculations. It shows a loss all over the place.
Yes. So what that's doing is it's demonstrating just what, and I have to actually pull it back up. So maybe bear with me a minute. And if we take another question, I can come back with a clearer answer. The loss that would be shown there is just by way of demonstrating an example. What if the company were not to achieve its targeted revenue? What if they come in a little bit under? How would that affect the following year's rate via this revenue reconciliation mechanism? To be clear, for 2025, if the board authorizes the rates as recommended, the company should not be incurring a loss in 2025. And then for the out years, the next four, you know, successive years, their rates are going to be changed by this new methodology with CPI. And they have to, you know, you're controlling the revenues. They need to control their expenses to fit within those revenues and have a modest profitability. So no, that loss is not a real projected loss. It's just by way of example, both for, and thank you again, I don't think anyone else read that in any of the six other districts that I've presented to in the last 3 days. So it's not an ongoing loss. It's just an example, both so the company could get comfortable with the mechanics and then also for you to be aware of those mechanics.
Thank you.
You just raised a question, actually, Director Scott, Vice President Scott raised a question that I was having about this attachment four. There's two columns, both labeled 2025, and they have different numbers.
Yes. So one of the things that is also an adjustment that we're recommending for the baseline to set 2026 rates, and you saw it on one of the prior slides, and I mentioned that the kind of agency fees elements that have been carried in the rates aren't really true to what's being paid. And that's a legacy effect of the old rate methodology, which didn't go into the level of granularity that we're going in today. And you might have seen something at the very bottom of one of my charts that said grossing up for franchise fees. We're going to eliminate that moving into 2026 so that your franchise fees will be calculated as your 6% franchise fee of the total projected revenue requirement. And so that's the difference between those two columns.
Okay, so then there's a difference between the 2025 under the new system and 2025 under the old system.
Correct. That is exactly correct.
Okay, good, yep. Good. I don't think I have any more questions. I will actually invite if Mr. Claren wants to come forward or is available to answer questions, Jeff Claren, who's been working with us for quite a while, you're general manager, right, of Waste Connections?
Yes, of yes. Mission Country Disposal.
Mission Country Disposal, okay. Yeah, did anybody have any questions for Mr. Claren? We might get back to you later, but...
I do want to clarify...
Did you want to add anything, too?
Yeah, thank you, President Gray and members of the board. There was a question by, Director Scott. You were talking about last time for the rate increases. So the two biggest components of there were unfunded mandates. One was 1383, which Mr. Schultz did talk about. One of it, too, was, if you remember years ago, that San Luis Obispo County actually brought a digester here, the first one in North America. And one of the things that was going on with that digester is being the first in North America, they were all over Europe, but when they came here first, they didn't realize what a beach community would do to their material. And with a beach community with that sand, really, really was very corrosive in their materials. So they had to replace parts that were supposed to last 10 years ahead of time. So that was one big thing that was a really big part of theirs, including 1383. The other part of the last rate increase was an unfunded mandate. It was also the California Resources Board. There was a 2015 modification where you cannot use any trucks older than that. And that's one of the things where I think this is part that goes with this new rate manual. We were going longer with trucks. That's why we wanted to, you know, go with the 10-year instead of the 7-year. We actually were forced to take a lot of the trucks out of it. And I think this is when I'm glad Garth is bringing this up, because this is going to be the same thing what the California Air Resources Board is going to do with the electrification. We want to be ahead of that. I know it's new technology, but this is why I think this is a great reason why to keep bringing it up, because eventually the technology is going to be there. It may not be there maybe for closer distance, but for further distance, it's not right there right now. So that's the one question. Hopefully I answered that, Director Scott, to kind of help you on that side from the big 40% jump last time.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Yeah, and then Director Farmer, you talked a little bit about corporate overhead. So I was actually fortunate enough to start with the garbage company in the early 2000s. Actually, it was in late 99 when we were a private company. So we had our own HR team. We had our own legal team. We had our own HR team. We had even our own safety person. And in 2002, Waste Connections purchased us, and there was a slowly transition to a lot of those services, IT, safety, that actually moved over to the corporate side of things. So all these years from the 2000, you know, there was a market cap on that side, on mainly in the, like what Mr. Schultz said, on officer salaries. So what you're seeing now is it's not the officer salaries anymore. It's actually overhead that we do not have at the facility. HR is a regional thing. We have legal support that's added out of our corporate office. A lot of our trainings that are happening outside our region or even our corporate side of things. And a few other things like that.
Okay. Thank you. Director Farmer, did you have any further questions? Because your light's on.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't even notice it was on. I'm glad I haven't been mumbling to myself, but thank you very much for the additional comment.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Claren. At this point, I want to invite any public comment, either from people in attendance here or online. I don't have any slips. Does anybody wish to comment on this presentation? Ms. Dodson, anybody online?
No.
Okay, great. I'll bring this back to the board for discussion. We're not going to have action on it, but we could, you know, if the board wanted to discuss any issues that they might want to see resolved in the future or anything else, this is the time for it. Yeah, Director Thomas.
Yeah, thank you so much, President Gray. And I did have tons of questions, you know, going through this in the first pass. And our general manager, you know, answered essentially most of those questions. So we're going to schedule a public hearing. Is that not taking board action today?
Mr. McElhinney, that's one question. You can answer that, yeah.
Yeah, thank you, Director Thomas and President Gray. We have it on the 21st agenda for you to make that motion if you decide to do that.
All right. Clear. And one of the things that really, flagged my interest when I saw the garbage rate, CPI, and, you know, I'm familiar with the different CPIs, consumer price indexes, indices, but never having seen the garbage rate CPI on FYI on page 46, there's of our agenda packet. There's a great table that shows the 10-year CPI month by month, and easy to see how that ramped up over the last few years when the inflation was escalating, and you know, with the 10-year average. So it is comforting on behalf of our public to know that we're capping the CPI adjustments at a 5%. I'm okay with that 2% floor. If inflation goes below that, great. And it's pretty clear that the accounting every 5 years, if basically Mission Country disposal has been burned from that, or if the public has been burned, that will be factored in. So that's a that's a good factor. And at first I had flagged. I thought replacing the garbage cans every year would be a ridiculous expense. But as pointed out, that's one per year, so that's on a every 3 year basis. Okay, so we don't have to use our water here to clean out our garbage cans. So that's a good thing. All right, that's all I had at this point.
Thank you, Dr. Thomas. Any comment? I think the public probably is not going to be needs to know, I guess, the situation we're in and why rates do have to go up. The only suggestion I'd make for the future, and this is not to act on today, but maybe we could, the question will come up, is there a cheaper way? Is there cheaper than going with Mission Country? Is there anybody else who would be available to do this service? And if we did it ourselves, how much it would cost? I think those questions are going to be out there. And I wouldn't say immediately, but I think it'd be good to think about answering them in some methodical way with some kind of a study or something. My hunch is that this is, in fact, the best deal for us. We're very isolated, and we're an expensive place to service. There's no doubt about that. And the service is excellent, in my view. But we should, you know, we owe the public with, a large view of this, a global view of this, as it were, of what the alternatives might be and what they might cost. So that, to me, is an item for future consideration. We might want to pick that up. Vice President Scott.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. The other thing is, and we've heard this before, is that you don't get to live here and not have garbage removal. And so, that fact in itself is, I think, something to talk about.
Great. With no further discussion, Director Thomas.
Yeah, thank you, President Gray. I'd forgotten one of the things I wanted to discuss. As I read through this, I'm thinking, okay, so what alternatives do we have? What alternatives? And we could say no thank you to the new rate adjustment methodology and stick with the 30-year-old methodology. That would be a big mistake. You know, any analysis of that would conclude that the new methodology is better for our customers. Seek other waste disposal providers. That's an alternative. You know, and we had a chat, and it's like, well, good luck. Right. And then the other alternative is, right, we do it ourselves. We generate this as a business, and just the, you know, I don't know if we even want to, you know, spend the resources to study that, because it's really easy to figure out that starting up a line of business on our own, you know, getting contracts with the waste disposal sites and the processors, the investment would be far in excess of what our ratepayers are currently paying. So I went through that, you know, think through all of the available alternatives, and in my mind, it would be essentially futile to you know, consume time studying mm-hmm. those.
Yeah. And one thing, I mean, kind of apropos of that, we are a very low waste generating community already. Those 32 gallon, you know, 86% of the customer base using the smallest cans. That means all the rest of our refuse is going into some kind of recycling and composting. So our net, you know, amount of waste going to landfills is quite small already. So I don't know how we could, you know, make that much less. And so what the problem is, it still has to get picked up. And I don't think there's any. I think the last time we were discussing these rates, we asked about the smaller bin size, the 20 gallon size, and I believe the answer was we don't have suitable trucks for that, that sort of thing. So I don't want to get into the details of that, but I know certain places like Los Osos have that. But rather than go through that process again of asking about that and finding out why we can't do it, I think we probably won't make that a topic of discussion unless there's something new happens. So, having said that, and having everybody our questions answered with this excellent presentation, I really thank all of you for coming. And I think we're well informed about what's coming ahead. And I do think the revised method is quite superior, and it's real world, you know, basically, to what we were doing before. So, thank you. Thank you very much. And we're going to take a short coffee break of about, let's say, 10 minutes. Come back at 2:27.
I know.
Okay, we're reconvening now. It's at 12:29. Before we move on to item 5A, Director Farmer had a request to me to add some comment related to the public comment earlier, and I wanted to find out from our council if that's okay for him to do that.
Related to public comment?
Your sound is breaking up. It was the public comment in the non-agenda public comment area.
Typically, you can't go back, and it's very limited action in public comments, so no.
Wow.
We're having trouble with the sound.
I think that's Darth Vader.
No.
You can't hear me?
Oh, you can hear me now. There you go. Yes, thank you.
Oh, okay. So he wants to add comments to public comment?
He wanted to add
this. I want to make a comment regarding the brief conversation that took place between General Manager McElhaney and Director Dean.
And that was in reference to Ms. Heinrich's comments.
Right.
Mm. You know, the Brannock's pretty limited in terms of responding to public comment, but I think if it's very brief, that's probably okay.
Thank you.
Briefly, Dr. Farmer.
I think my main concern was the statement was made that we were following Pavel Ogren's advice with regard to for existing customers only. And yet, if I'm not mistaken, in the CDP application, there's a statement about obligations and about operating the facility for up to 6 months at 24 hours per day. I just want to make sure that when we're making this comment that it's still for existing customers only, that that's an accurate statement.
Okay, thank you. I don't think we don't want to extend this too long because I think that point can be addressed, I think, in some more future discussion because it comes down to the description of the description.
Maybe
General Anders can just give shed some light on it.
So I'll make it short and sweet with existing connections is the way it was titled, and existing connections is defined in our municipal code.
Mm-hmm.
And
existing commitments, too.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Broader. But again, I don't know. We cannot get into discussion among ourselves, certainly, on this issue. But Mr. Director Farmer, anything more?
Not a problem. Thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate the clarity.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much. On to item 5A. Over to Mr. McElhenney. This is a discussion and consideration of approval of a public works contract with Hartzell General Engineering Contractor for the construction of the East Ranch Community Park Public Restroom Installation Project and authorization for the general manager to execute the agreement.
Thank you, President Gray. Well introduced. I'll go into the fiscal impact.
Yeah.
The East Ranch Community Park Public Restroom Installation Project, we initially had a budget of $549,000. To date, the district has spent approximately $242,000, almost $243,000, and we have about $360,000 left to complete the rest of the project. Some of that will be reimbursed with some of our grant monies on the restroom. When we went out to get our engineering estimate, it came in. I know there were some comments about the engineering estimate coming in around $72,795, and then our lowest bid was around $190,000. We're seeing this, I would say, industry-wide right now. We're having some difficulties getting bids that are close to our engineering estimates. So just to clear up any confusion about that. I do have Mr. Green here to answer any further questions. And I'll turn it over to you, President Gray.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. McElhenney. Yes. Any questions from directors on this item? You wanted to add, Mr. Green?
No, just that it was lowest bidder. So it was awarded to the lowest bidder. This is necessary for the bathroom installation, obviously. Bathrooms should be delivered last week of January or first week of February, and that's about all I can update. If you have any questions about the contract or the other construction price that came in, our proposal was at like $382,000, so it was easy to take the Hartzell bid, and we've done work with the GC Hartzell before, and he does fantastic work. So,
thank you very much. There is public comment on this issue from Christine Heinrichs. Welcome again.
Yes, thank you, Christine Heinrichs, Cambria. Yes, I had a question about those figures, and I'm afraid that your comments have not really cleared that up for me. Whether it's the document I saw on the bid form said $187,000, but you say that it's really only $72,000, and I didn't understand that difference. And the other bidder, the bid was $381,000.
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, when there's that much discrepancy, I just wondered if he was bidding on the same project or there was some confusion. I mean, that bid's twice the low bid.
Yeah. Well, where?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I just, that just seemed like something that, to me, needed more explanation, but...
No, it was absolutely the same project, and he knew he was bidding on. He performed a site visit with us as well, so that was his number. That's what he thinks it's going to take for him and his company to do that. Think it's a little egregious?
My concern is that the other one might be too low.
No, we've confirmed. They were both at the site walk. They were the only two bidders on the project.
Hang on a second.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
Hang on a second.
I look forward to it.
A general manager is signaling to me.
I want to make sure we don't get
into a discussion.
Our hands slapped again by.
Yeah, I was gonna probably cut it. You know, thank you, Ms. Heinrichs. Yeah, with public comment, especially, we probably should wait. I mean, if the question is asked, I think the best thing to do is to wait till the public commenter is finished, and then anything we want to say it to in response. And also, discussing bidders, I think, is a little bit can be a little dicey. So.
But I can make some quick
general manager McElhenney. Yes. Yeah.
What Ms. Heinrichs doesn't understand is the engineering estimate is when you hire an engineer and they give a ballpark figure on what they think the cost should be to do this project using their BNI manual, 2020 rates, 2025 rates. We've had issues. We're having another issue with one of our other projects in which these engineering estimates are coming in and you're seeing bidders take a look at them and say, okay, well, if I'm going to come to Cambria and do this job, I'm not doing it for $72,000. I'm going to do it for $190,000 or, as mentioned, $390,000. So that's what's occurring here. Engineer sets what they think it should cost to build this project, and then you fly the RFP. RFP's flown, and then what they bid is what they bid.
Yeah.
And unfortunately for us, it was quite a bit more expensive, even with the lowest bidder.
Yeah, it's worth noting too that we're on one end of an inflation spike, and a lot of the engineering estimates are older, based on information and guidebooks and things they had, tables they had that were probably current before the inflation. Talking about building inflation has been really high, so that's one of the reasons. The bids are coming in now. Bids are in real time now. Engineering estimates were 2022 or whatever. Data. So that's a big factor. And Mr. Green, I don't know if you agree with that, but I think...
No, absolutely. Yeah. I think what this has shown us is specifically on this project, and we've reflected that in our other projects after that, is that we're seeking multiple engineering estimates prior to that,
right.
So we get a better grasp of true costs. You've got one really low, you've got one really high. You want to see which one, you towards the north or the south, or you somewhere in between. So that's why in our larger projects like this, we'll be doing further engineering estimates to provide more accurate proposals.
Thank you. Director Farmer, question.
Yeah, thank you, President Green. Not so much a question. I just want to make this observation, and I believe that this took place when both Director Dean and I were on the board before, you know, the rest of you perhaps, or President Gray, you might have been here, when we were determining, okay, which of the three choices with regard to restroom are we going to choose, and we chose the least expensive, which at that time was $150,000, and the other ones were $250,000 and $350,000. We chose the least expensive one at $150,000. Okay, there's going to be some additional costs, and now it's this amount.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that long ago, and I'm like, I'm not going to say I'm pulling my hair out because there's not much left to pull out, but I mean, it's like so damn frustrating, and who's getting stuck with this? Unfortunately, the ratepayers of this community. And we're finally getting to where, we're finally getting a community park. And, you know, the parking lot costs $304,000. So if this goes, it's almost like $900,000 for a parking lot and a restroom. And it's like...
And dog park.
I should not forget the dog park.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm sorry to just be throwing that out there.
Also, bear in mind that the restroom itself is prefab, which, I mean, that's been built. Yeah. That's basically been constructed already and paid for quite a while ago.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah, so that was...
These are the costs for installation.
Installation only,
yeah.
Okay. Any other public comment, first of all? I'll just finish the public comment and get back to the board.
Oh, yeah.
Anybody in attendance want to comment, or anybody online?
No.
Okay, I'll bring it back to the board for discussion and a motion. I think Director Thomas had his light on.
Yeah, thank you, President Gray. And I'm not ready for the motion yet, but a couple questions, and I brought this up to the general manager, but I just wanted to comment. I was blown away at the bid from RCH coming in more than twice the other bid. That's very often an indication of either contractor doesn't want to do the work. the scope is so poorly defined that they have to pad the estimate for risk, or there's inherent risks in the project that they're factoring in. And I've read through the I've read through the bid documents. The only thing that was confusing to me on page 95, the project description, where it says contractor shall provide a finished slab. And of course, we know the restroom is coming with a slab. Reading the bid document, it kind of sounds like the contractor is providing a slab as part of their scope of work, but the GM assures me that through those discussions, the contractors know they're not including pouring a pad. So, you know.
That's why we perform site visits with all the contractors who are bidding on it, so we can walk through those questions or any discrepancies they might have.
Yeah. So, right. And with that, it's hang on for the ride, because if this is just one indication of things to come in this new new construction environment.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you, Director Dean.
Okay.
Any other comment from board members or discussion?
President Gray.
Yes.
I did want to address one of the concerns.
Okay. Go ahead.
I believe our timeline on here is a little bit off for our phases in terms of installation. I think that could have been a side effect from us preparing this RFP rather early in the process, saving it, and then we were getting ready to launch it. And unless Mr. Green can correct me, but our phases are going to shift a little bit. I think phase one was supposed to be sometime late October into November. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we're in November now, and we're heading into the wet season. So our hope is that phase will begin here maybe in December, early January, prior to the drop of the restroom.
The GC is basically ready as soon as he receives resolution from us here. So, yeah.
You're good. Dr. Thomas.
President Gray, are you ready for a motion?
I definitely am. Oh, wait. Dr. Dean.
Okay. So this bid includes the concrete walkway. Okay. And we're going to do that before they deliver the restroom. Okay. Well, that truck has to back up with the crane. They're up to 30 feet away from the restroom. Are they going to be able to straddle that concrete walkway all right?
Yes. We've during the site walk, we also had the crane operator or the crane company operator, regional manager come out and measure a couple of different locations.
Okay.
There was the ability to use a 72-foot crane where we wouldn't even need to enter the area to have that placed in, but it was an additional $10,000 mobilization cost because it had to come out of Los Angeles. So they assured us that they could do that with that.
So the company that we're getting the restroom from that's going to deliver the restroom and put it in place, aren't we using their crane? And don't they provide their own crane?
No, this is a sub that we're using. It's through them, but it's a subcontractor through them. So that's why we've all had to meet at the site to kind of view it.
And then might want to provide some clarification. So the sidewalk cement path will be in first before the restroom drop? Right.
That was my question.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Great.
Yeah.
Dr. Thomas.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for asking that question, Director Dean. I've asked that question twice, and the answer I've heard because I wouldn't do it that way, certainly, if I were the engineering manager on this. I mean, the answer I've heard twice is that all the prep, all the stubs are going to be prepared. The restroom is going to show up on the flatbed. Crane's going to come. The installation contractor is going to be there to help with the rigging, and they're going to drop the restroom on the pad. Once that's in place and leveled, and you know exactly where it is, then the walkways were going to be poured up to it. That's the answer that I had heard.
Correct. When I'm talking about a pad, it's actually the decomposed granite, the DG that's there, the class 2 base, that will be pressed on. There are rebar that come out of that we will then pour the concrete so that we adheres to the rebar, and that will be the pad, and that will be done after it is set in place.
Got
that
it.
Is correct. Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry to be misleading.
Yeah.
I think we're square.
Okay. I think we cleared it up, yeah. Dr. Thomas here.
So now we might be ready for a motion.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for clarifying that, because that scared me for a moment. I move that the board approves the Public Works contract with Hartzell Construction, general engineering contractor for construction of the East Ranch Community Park public restroom installation project, and authorize our general manager to execute the agreement.
Do I have a second?
Second it.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve the public works contract with Hartzell General Engineering Contractor, Inc. for the construction of the East Ranch Community Park public restroom installation project and authorization for the general manager to execute the agreement. Could I have a roll call, please?
Director Thomas?
Aye.
Director Dean?
Aye.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
Vice President Scott?
Aye.
President Gray?
Aye. Moving on to 5B, another a related contract. I'll hand this over to General Manager McElhenney.
Thank you, President Gray. Agenda item 5B, discussion and consideration of approval of an agreement for consultant services with Padre Associates Incorporated for the environmental monitoring of the East Ranch Community Park restroom installation project. Our fiscal impact, we have a budget of, like discussed before, this is the same budget, $549,432. That amount is, we have a grant. In that amount is included the grant that we have for $177,952. To date, we have $242,820 that's been spent, leaving $306,000 to complete the project. We do have a good buffer there to complete the project between the cost of environmental monitoring and the installation project. And with that, I'll turn it over to the board for discussion.
Yeah, thank you. First of all, any questions of staff on this proposal? Okay, I have no questions at this point. Oh, please, Mr. Thomas, Director Thomas.
And and thank you, President Gray. And it's a bit tangential, but I would just put the request out there, maybe a plea. You know, page 113, where it says the work will be divided into two phases. Phase one, you know, which will occur mid to late October. In the future, if we can just add that word, are forecasted or estimated to begin. I'll just ask inclusion of that reflection of uncertainty in future things that go out, because folks will look at this and say, well, no, that didn't happen, and I understand the rationale. It's what we're thinking at the time. We want to be proactive. We want to be aggressive, but just put one little word in there reflecting uncertainty. So that we end up doing what we said we're going to do.
I can definitely do uncertain.
Go ahead. Yeah, we have anticipated schedule, and maybe the word something like that in the paragraph right above there could be expected to, or whatever. Any other questions? Open this to public comment. Is there anyone in attendance here who would like to comment on this item? And if not, is there anyone online?
Yes, Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
Ms. Bettenhausen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I want to know why 5B came before 5A. In other words, why does the environmental question come after the permit to go ahead and build? Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have it? Do you have an answer to that? Other than that, they're both on the same topic, but. Director Thomas.
From my point of view, the 5B is not assessing the environmental impacts of this project and assessing whether or not we should do it. It's monitoring the environmental impacts during construction. Yeah, right. And so it makes sense to me to say, here's what we're going to do, and then here's how we're going to monitor doing that. So, yeah. And it's in terms of kind of a, this is not a plan phase. It's the plan, do, check, act. This is the construction is the doing, and this is the checking. So that would be my logic. I hope that's satisfactory.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna would have said too. Because this is to monitor the actual work being done, its impact, basically the things that have to be, watched for undue impacts as the construction is going. So you have to have a project. You have to kind of have a construction agreement in place before you this is kind of a logical thing after that. It's the logical next step.
Right.
Now that we have construction going, we'll get the environmental monitoring in place too. So.
Right. If you didn't agree to the construction, then we wouldn't need the environmental monitoring.
Exactly. So hope that answers the question. Any other comments online?
No.
Yeah, thank you. Well, back to the board for discussion and hopefully a motion. Lights on. Dr. Farmer.
Well, yeah, I just want to make a comment that I was quite, I'm not going to say impressed, maybe that's a word, or comforted by the professionalism with which Padre and associates presented themselves to us and their employees and so forth. And, you know, I just get the feeling, how could you say it, of confidence that these people know what they're doing. And when I look at the, considering the numbers that come before us, you know, these days, I feel, well, this, all things considered, and I could be wrong, that they're not really charging us a lot of money considering the professionalism and what they're going to be doing. That's just my personal feeling. I don't know how anybody else feels about that, but that's my take on it. And I'm not going to comment on the other person that application, so to speak. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Farmer. Any other comment? Any other discussion? Dr. Dean.
Are you ready for a motion?
I am.
Okay, if I may. I move that we approve the agreement for consultant services with Padre Associates Incorporated for the environmental monitoring of the East Ranch Community Park Restoration Installation Project.
I'll go ahead and second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve the agreement with consultant services for consultant services with Padre Associates, Inc. for the environmental monitoring of the East Ranch Community Park Restroom Installation Project. Could I have a roll call, please?
Director Dean?
Aye.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
Director Thomas?
Aye.
Vice President Scott?
Aye.
President Gray?
Aye. Thank you, everybody. We'll move on to the reports section. Reports from the, and I'll take them as one unit, Finance, Policy, and Pros Committee and Resources and Infrastructure Committee, and then other liaison reports and ad hoc committee reports. First of all, does anybody on the board want to add or correct anything in the reports they've submitted?
I do.
Vice President Scott.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. In my report on page 216, in the beginning of my chairperson report, it says three public members, and then it only lists two.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is there were three, and I didn't have the third person's name, but I do now, but I don't have it with me.
Okay.
So that's called...
I think it's Jeff. I don't remember.
Jeff Wilson?
Jeff Wilson. It may have been Jeff Wilson from Post Committee.
Right? I will... Definitely.
Yeah, okay.
You just put Jeff.
Oh.
I guess the remedy for that is just to tell Ms. Dodson.
Okay.
Reason I asked that question, Dr. Farmer, you're first.
No, I just wanted to say it was as if Vice President Scott here was just, I'm going to compound my embarrassment. So there we are.
Well, the bottom line is, it's the truth.
And that's always the right thing to do.
On my report, there's a mistake which is pointed out by one of the board members. On the consent agenda paragraph, it says the committee approved the July 23rd to 2024 regular meeting minutes. That should be September 24th, 2024 regular meeting minutes. And there's a very small typo at the bottom of the page in the sentence on the second paragraph under 4A, where second line from the bottom, there's a parenthesis that starts now at $2 million. Should have a little closed parenthesis and a comma. So those are my corrections. Any other questions from the board members on these reports? Any public comment on the reports?
No.
Anybody online? Okay.
No.
I think... Let me see here if there's anything else we need to cover before we go to future agenda items. I think we're fun with that. We're done with that item. Future agenda items. This is when we have an opportunity. I'm going to get the page here. To request a formal, request a formal agenda report be prepared, and the item placed on a future agenda. So, if there comes any proposals from board members, from directors, to put something on a future agenda that hasn't been already, already brought up, because Ms. Dodson keeps a record of them. I don't know if we have to go through the list. But anyone want anything put on a future agenda? Nope. At this point, then, we will adjourn to closed session. And this is on two items. One is a conference, both conferences with labor negotiators, but they're regarding two union contracts, SEIU and IAFF. At this point, this is the point for public comment on the topic. Anyone in the hall want to comment on this, or anyone online?
No.
So I'll turn this over, I think, to, at this point, turn it over to Mr. Carmel.
Thank you, President Gray. The board will now adjourn to closed session for a conference with its labor negotiators pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6. The agency designated representatives are General Manager Matthew McElhaney and Che Johnson. The employee groups are the International Association of Firefighters, Local 4635, and the Service Employees International Union, Local 620. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carmel. Dr. Dean had a comment or a...
A couple of members of the public asked me who Che Johnson is, so it might be helpful if we could say where Che Johnson came from and what he's representing.
Yeah, Mr. McElhaney,
Thank you. Mr. Johnson is our attorney with our HR firm, Lieber, Cassidy, and Whitmore.
Yeah. Thank you. So, meeting is adjourned to closed session. Thank you, everybody.